For September the 16th, 2022, we talk about immortality, live alive, Taiji, and much more. Welcome to Level 428. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back after us taking a week off for Labor Day and various things that I'm sure we're going to talk about. I know at least two of us were on a trip. I think so. If I can recall, one of us was recovering from Dragon Con. It's all been a blur. David, what's going on? How was how you been the past few weeks?
I've been very, very tired. not this past weekend, but the weekend before that was Dragon Con. So basically, I don't think it was Wednesday through we drove back home on Monday. And I don't think any of the nights I got to bed before like 2 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
Yikes.
Because Dragon Con, one of their big things is concerts.
Okay.
And so they, and a lot of them will like start at midnight.
Oh, wow.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Man, that is a young man's game.
Yeah, yeah, or someone with lots and lots of caffeine. You know, a little from column A, a little from column B.
You know, one tends to go with the other.
Yeah, so, had a really good time. I posted a picture in our Slack. One of the big things, the costuming track has the bunny hutch is okay. One of their big parties where everyone dresses either as a Playboy Bunny or a Hugh Hefner, except, kind of cosplay style.
Okay.
So, if you ever wanted to see, I don't know, Mandalorian Hugh Hefner or...
Oh, I don't. I wicked don't.
I think there was a Maleficent where, her horns were actually bunny ears, just all sorts of things. So I did a sort of blue kind of cyber gothy bunny.
Cool.
So, yeah. So lots of, fake fur and, vinyl transparent-y stuff. So that was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, I had to wait in line for like 2 hours to get in.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's so Dragon Con is huge. I mean, absolutely huge. And so any of the major parties and stuff like that, you either get there 1 or 2 hours early, or you wait in line for 1 or 2 hours, one or the other.
Okay.
That's just kind of what it is. And I mean, in some ways that's nice because, I guess the alternative is just, raise the money or raise the price until enough people can afford to go that there's, no line.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to be the right way to do it.
Exactly. So that was probably the most least good part of it. But other than that, we did a couple of panels. So we did a panel where we basically taught the Gaffy Stick, the Tusken Raider, tribal dance from Mandalorian.
Yeah,
you're talking about. Sorry, from Book of Boba Fett, rather.
I mean, it's the same thing.
It kind of is.
We can call it Mandalorian 2.5.
Yeah, well, and then, so that was really cool. We had like 60 people actually show up for it, which was amazing. We brought as many, staves and spears and stuff like that as we had, in our group, and then we had a couple of Ewok cosplayers that had some spears with them, and so they used those, and so it was just a whole thing. We did a Wing Chun workshop, which again was really cool, really great turnout. And then one of the big events is, you know, there's different tracks at Dragon Con. So there's like British pop culture, video games, like tabletop gaming, post-apocalyptic, you know, all those sorts of things. And one of them is Silk Road, which is basically like Asian culture. So
like Wuxia, Kung Fu, kind of things like that. Yeah.
Everything from that to Godzilla to Bollywood, to like belly dance, you know, pretty much. It's kind of the...
Sorry. It's like anything east of Italy.
Yeah, pretty much.
including all the way back around the planet to the west of Italy. that is a wildly broad category.
Oh, yeah. No, it's really funny. You know, especially, yeah, reading some of the things in is very much a catch-all category. It tends to be, and, you know, as you might imagine, anime is not in that. So, you know, a lot of it tends to be... You know, most of the live action movies from like Korea, Japan, and China and India, things like that. But one of the events is the Silk Road Expo, which is basically 90% different forms of belly dance, and then our group doing martial arts.
Okay.
But one of the cool things is. George Perez, who's one of the, you know, is a big time comic book artist, you know, invented, most famous for inventing the Teen Titans.
Okay.
Passed away this year. And his wife is a belly dancer, belly dance instructor. And so he always hosted the Silk Road Expo. And through that, got to be really good friends with my, you know, martial arts instructor. And so this year, as sort of a tribute or whatever, each of our demonstrations was basically a weapon and, you know, modeled after what a character he created. So I did a staff kata dressed cosplaying as and kind of inspired by Deathstroke.
Okay.
Who's, you know, one of the villains he created. So that was really cool. That was a lot of fun.
Nice.
How many total different costumes or outfits do you think you went through over the course of Dragon Con?
So basically I did, you know, the Deathstroke, Bunny Hutch thing, a Catboy outfit, and basically The Catboy outfit and the rest of my stuff was basically I just kind of pack a ton of random goth paraphernalia and just sort of mix and match based on what the weather's like and what I feel like. So kind of you know, too full on and then, you know, just miscellaneous. I brought, but I didn't get to wear, a kimono and hakama I had made. But that is kind of a pain in the ass to wear. And also, it's in, you know, it's in Atlanta in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
And a hakama is, like, made out of 8 yards of fabric.
Yeah, so. probably not wise.
Yeah. So, other than that, I think, probably the, most silly thing I experienced is I went to a panel that was panel discussion by, six authors who wrote, I guess you could call, depending on your perspective or whatever, either like monster romance novels or monster erotica.
Hmm.
Okay. So, you know, all the, like, you know, I was seduced by a billionaire Tyrannosaurus.
Okay, yeah.
Or, you know.
Well, you could find five different people that write stuff like that?
Oh, no, six.
Oh, six.
Yeah, so that's one of the interesting things they talked about is it's becoming increasingly popular and somewhat more mainstream. And one of them talked about, like, the fact that they basically Barnes and Noble's, you know, decide they wanted to stock, you know, one of the novels. But whereas the original cover was very, very obvious, like romance novel, like, oh yeah, that's totally a alien ravishing a chick.
Mm-hmm.
The cover they chose was just like, looks like generic young adult novel.
See, that's gonna make more problems than if you just put the right cover on it.
I think. So she talked about, you know, being in a Barnes and Noble's and seeing some mom, you know, with the book, you know, and you know, obviously you don't want to be like walk up to someone and be like, as a writer of monster erotica,
yeah,
but having to be like, man, have you seen that? I heard there's a lot of sex in that book.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
There was one guy on the panel, I think, you know, who at one point commented that, you know, he was, you know, his thing, you know, one of the things he was into was feet. So, you know, really didn't understand snake girls, but was really into spider chicks.
Yeah, no, that stands to reason.
My other favorite part of it is...
I take issue because it's like, you know, boobs are nice, but I don't want 60 boobs on a person.
Clearly, you are not the target market.
Yeah.
My other favorite thing is that apparently the community, I don't know, is kind of, you know, solidifying on the term for this genre is going to be creature literature, which was chosen solely so that it could be shortened to cliterature.
Oh no.
Yeah, okay, so creature literature, I don't know about having two cheer words into it.
Well, that's why you have to shorten it.
I know. You don't work backwards like that. Oh my god. Huh.
So yeah, the more of the story being Dragon Con literally has pretty much anything you can imagine.
Well, it sounds like you had fun.
Yeah, I really did.
Nice. Dennis, how about you? What's going on?
Yeah, I was on a trip too. I was in Virginia celebrating my 11th wedding anniversary.
Yeah, it can't be. You're wrong.
I know. Time flies when you're having fun. We went to the Steel Tavern Inn, which is a bed and breakfast. The, you know, traditional gift for year 11 is steel. So that's
okay.
Every year we do a theme place.
But it was perfect. Didn't get her a katana.
No, I missed my window. We are doing a Disney cruise in the near future, and I figure there's enough steel in that boat to we're kind of like, yeah, that's our anniversary gift.
Yeah, fair enough.
So,
the location. Stolen something from her for your gift.
No, that's that's year 15.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, is theft is the traditional gift. but it was perfect. It was like, you know, in Virginia, in like really great hiking area, but close enough to several cute little downtowns. So every day we kind of did the first half of the day hiking and the second half of the day drinking in quaint little areas. So mm-hmm. Lots of fun.
Better than do it the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially like, you know, we were hiking up very cliffy kind of places
mm-hmm.
that would have been a bad combination.
Yeah. But
yeah. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, that's the big thing. I, you know, obviously a couple weeks have passed, so there was lots of action, but that's the big one.
Nice. Ben, how about you?
I had a trip three. I went to Cincinnati for a friend's wedding. It was Chris Partridge. Cole, I believe
we, oh, yeah.
We all hung out in New York one time and played a movie game in a park.
Yeah, we did. We went to that G.I. Joe film festival thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. It's just stop motion kind of deal. Was that G.I. Joe or was it just stop motion?
I think it was just stop motion, but G.I. Joe was featured heavily. So incidentally themed. And then I also got to hang out with Dennis's children while I was in Cincinnati.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. I got to, so I stayed with their grandparents, Dennis's parents and parent-in-laws, got to go for a run, hang out with the kids, Luke and Milo and Barrett was a lot of fun. I haven't been around that many children for that long of a time in a while. So, I was trying to kind of help co-parent with my uncle and my aunt. I learned a couple things. I think there was one stretch where I was watching them just by myself for like an hour or two.
Learned you can't stop the noise no matter how hard you try.
There is a way to do that. You hand them a Nintendo Switch and they are quiet for hours.
I think you mean a Nintendo Switch. They call it the Nintendo.
Oh, I see. So I discovered that early on. I think it was Milo is much more into playing video games and just figuring things out on his own. Whereas Luke is much more of like, let's make a decision now and see what happens and learn that way sort of thing.
I think Milo's fine motor skills have kind of a leg up right now.
Okay.
And Luke doesn't like being second best. And so what he defaults to is coaching Milo through play.
Yeah.
And he just always wants to be coaching Milo.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I briefly taught them the rules for chess. And we played it for all of like 5 or 10 minutes. And they were both extremely bored by it. So then we did something else. But even in that, it was a similar sort of pattern. Luke would be like, just make a move, Milo. Come on. And then Milo would just be like, no, I'm thinking. Like, I need more time to think, you know? So it's very adorable. And then I also learned that, you know, you can use, like, the Switch as, like, a bartering item. So, like, you can bribe them to do things. So, like, I taught them how to play Othello. And I would told them, like, if you can beat me at this game, then you can play Switch right now. And so for 30 minutes, they were playing Othello and trying to win at that game. So that was a lot of fun. I think we played Connect Four as well. So anyway,
nice.
I had a lot of fun playing logical puzzle games with them. So,
And how was Barrett at chess?
You know, he's a little bit of a slow learner right now.
He swallowed almost all the pieces.
I mean, at that point, I think you've won.
If you I need a desperate change. I made an en passant.
I don't understand the mechanics of that joke.
The joke is that someone would ever play chess for fun.
Not even the world champion at chess plays chess for fun.
Yeah.
Was it the Magnus Carlsen or something like that?
I mean, world champion chess players almost all go crazy. So
yeah, that's fair.
Well, that took a left turn. but the rest of society was good. Came back home and I saw a OC's concert 2 nights ago and that was sweet. So
cool.
That's all I got.
Nice. I mean, I don't have much. I mostly just stayed around the house and worked and did stuff. So there's
attaboy.
Hung around with family. my pinched nerve and all of that, I finally managed to move an entire tree trunk's worth of wood chips to make mulch beds. So that was good. Had to go to Tractor Supply Company and buy something called a manure fork.
Uh-oh.
What is that?
It's like a pitchfork for moving, for moving mulch. I tried using a shovel for it and, something about the surface area, the tines of the fork, go into the pile easier and then you can lift it and throw, it is easier on the back. And that was worth $30 to get that because that's probably not the last mulch I'll throw. Today my Steam Deck pre-order just came up. So, Yeah, so I'll have that to talk about.
Enough of that outside nonsense.
it's nice to have a balance. It's actually beautiful out around here. Have my windows open all day and went out and took a little walk. It's good. Yeah. We need to talk about video games because I have new games. And I'm sure that all of us have some stuff. So we've got to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I have something new that also came out very recently.
Go for it. Nice. Go for it.
Yeah. I played and finished over the past 2 weekends. I did it on stream, Immortality.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I'm not familiar with that one.
So this is an FMV mystery horror game by the same team that did Her Story.
Sam Barlow?
Sam Barlow, also the guy who did Silent Hill Shattered Memories. Similar to Her Story, you are watching a bunch of footage. And the way that, you know, the mechanic is kind of figuring out what to do with that footage to jump to a related thing that will reveal more of the story. This is difficult to talk about because it's almost entirely a story, but I can give you some of the mechanics at the very least and kind of explain roughly how my arc with it went. Mm-hmm. So if you remember Her Story, you were watching this interrogation footage, and as you were watching, you saw subtitles at the bottom of the screen, and I believe you could click individual words or you could run searches in the database to find other clips that had that exact same word in it. So, you know, if you're talking to her and like it's like, oh yeah, I saw this knife on the counter. And then he's like, okay, well, knife, I want to see other clips that are related to knife. Okay, this didn't give me everything that I wanted. What about blade? What about stab? Doing stuff like that, right?
That takes you to Wesley Snipes and be like, I don't want that.
At least the first two are good.
I'm so disappointed that he got replaced.
Who do they get? Did they get Mahershala to do Blade? Is that what they're doing?
I don't recall.
I'm actually down with that. I didn't hear about that.
That may have been a rumor that I heard. That'd be cool. So in this one, it's the mechanics are a little bit similar. Let me give you the premise. It is you're looking through the raw footage of three movies shot between 1968 and 1999, all of which are starring the same actress. I think her name is Marissa Marceau. It is three movies, the last two of which were never released because of accidents that happened on the set. Also, like, this actress Marissa, she looks exactly the same in 1968 as she does in 1999.
Convenient.
Apparently has never aged, even though the director, who is also a common element in these, has. And so, weird. Like, it is just, you're not given a prompt, you're not really given any direction. It sits you down and gives you a couple of clips it gives you a clip of like the director talking on a late night show to give, like, to walk you through all the interaction. And then it says, all right, here you go. And the cool part of this, and also of Her Story, is it is a real mystery insofar as you are also trying to figure out what questions to ask. It's like, I don't even know, like, okay, so I'm walking in, the title screen mentions this woman, so let's focus on her for a little bit. And then you start noticing weird stuff, and then you start noticing things happening with the footage that are kind of strange. You're interacting with all these clips, which is raw footage of not only like stuff that they have shot for the movie, but also taped rehearsals, you know, home movie kind of things, people taping at you know, cast parties, kind of stuff.
And when you say weird stuff happening to the footage, do you mean like glitches in the images type of weird or
yeah, what? Yeah. Just like, you know, it's a horror game. There's supernatural stuff happening. But you are looking at all of these on what would be a it's called a Moviola machine. It's that's a brand name, but it's become just synonymous with any of the mechanisms that old-timey editors, by old-timey I mean anybody who actually edited cellulose film, would use to review footage. So you've got, you know, you can move it forward and backward at different speeds. You can advance frame by frame, things like that. And so you're going in looking for anything strange, like watching individual clips to get the story, and then going back and panning around. Instead of typing anything that you see in the transcript, so instead of, you know, like, okay, I see a blade on the counter there, instead of typing, you know, blade, or instead of typing knife, or instead of typing Wesley Snipes, you instead go into what's called photo mode, and you click on that object. Nice. And what it'll do is, and this is where it starts underwhelming me a little bit, it will take you to a random clip that also features that person or thing.
A random clip.
Yes. So it doesn't bring up a bunch of options. It's just, it takes you and it will prefer to do a match clip. So, you know, if you are, you know, if you click on like a close up of somebody's face at a three quarter, you know, looking at something, you click on there, it will prioritize any clip of that person from the same angle.
But it's like the Google I'm feeling lucky button.
Kinda. Yeah.
I imagine it's not like completely random. Like it wouldn't jump to like the final scenes or something in the climax of the story.
Especially with this, I think you're right. I think that there are like different tiers that it is putting in. Like, all right, we're not going to give you this row of clips until you've seen that row of clips, and until something's happening there. So this ends up being like almost a like more impressive as a metadata kind of project than like a strictly mechanical or narrative one. Just kind of like, oh, just imagining the hotspots and the dependencies, you know, like,
it's okay, what smart TVs promised us.
Yeah. And you have to make some, like, you have to make some real intuitive leaps, you know, like, and eventually that starts getting unreliable too. Like you'll click on somebody and it will go to show somebody else, or it'll show something else. There's a little bit of like disappointing fuzziness to the logic insofar as like, all right, an early clip, the director of the first film is an Alfred Hitchcock kind of guy, sick fuck who likes torturing his actresses. Okay. And it, like an early clip that I got was Marissa doing like a table read or whatever. And she's supposed to be real upset or something like that. And the director starts throwing wadded up pieces of paper at her just to try and break her concentration. Real dick move. Also, like there is a current in this of just like, oh yeah, women have been like massively mistreated in Hollywood is a certain aspect of this too. Mm-hmm. But it is, you know, it's just present. If you're playing this, you're going to see some uncomfortable stuff. So I did a freeze frame on one of the balls of paper thinking, all right, like I want to find any other place where this is happening. Okay. So I'm thinking it's tagged wadded up paper or thrown paper, something like that. So I click on that. No, it's tagged script. And instead of going and showing like the script for just that movie, it will show you like a script for any of the three movies that are there. So like, it's not as precise as I wanted, and figuring out how to get on the game's level for how granular it was going to be was ultimately something that that it took effort, but it like was necessary in order to figure out how to move logically through the question, through the clips and follow lines of inquiry. Right.
So did you basically pretend the freeze frame clicking didn't exist? Once you kind of got to that point?
No, it's that's the only way to uncover new clips. It's more,
God.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying that was in addition to a typing function.
So there is no dialogue search. So it is random at the start. Eventually the possibility states start constricting. Which makes it a little bit easier, and you learn what is going to give you the best results. So you know that if you click on the slate that is used to, you know, to mark a shot, you know, the clapboard kind of thing. Well, that will take you to anything that was actually shot to be included in the movie. There are certain people, you know, their faces, like, okay, this is a particular person who's like crew. So this light guy or this production assistant, they're going to take me to stuff that's in between the scenes, you know, either like rehearsals or stuff like that. Same thing with like lighting equipment and stuff. You poke at the edges and eventually the randomness becomes not as big of a deal, but the game does kind of require you to, you know, to bend to it in that degree and be very comfortable, you know, having the game direct you as opposed to you direct it, which is a bummer because I played Her Story and I had, you know, like a full legal pad full of like mind maps with different, you know, just sprawling webs of different search terms, you know, stuff that I just that came to mind, like, okay, we're going to go back and we're going to chase each of these down to as many spokes as we can. That kind of deal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The beautiful minding that game was half the fun.
Yes. Yeah. This. So, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, I was going to kind of jump topics.
Oh yeah. Like this, I ended up making notes, but it was more notes to keep because it's three different movies with three different casts, and different character names. Also, there's an element of each of the movies has something to do with, alternate personalities or alter egos. People will, you know, one of the characters or, you know, a handful of the characters will be one person or another person, you know? So like my character is in disguise, you know, as like in the first one, a woman disguises herself as a male monk to get into a monastery to, you know, to seduce another monk. So you have to keep track of both names on that just because they're going to be referenced and you have to know the actors' names because, you know, if you're going to click them and search for them, it's easier to keep everything straight. So I did end up taking notes and stuff, but it was more like an inventory than anything.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So one of the things I heard about this was that it does indulge in some jump scares. How much is that a thing?
I didn't notice any. Ben, you watched. I don't know if you're more sensitive to jump scares than I am. Did you notice any when you were looking at it?
I was noticing more of the awkward, like, sex scenes that they were filming throughout the game.
Yep. Yeah, no. Yeah, it's all simulated. Or, you know, it's not directly shown. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not close up on PNV. But, yeah. Unless
the P stands for plaster.
Oh yeah, that's the mask scene is fucked up. you know, I don't remember jump scares at all. Like, there's creepiness, but nothing like there's no screamers. You know, you remember back in the day, you would be on Newgrounds and there'd be a video that was like real calm and, you know, turn up the volume, and then you face of a corpse kind of deal. Nothing like that. This did not trip my jump scare threshold, but video games don't make me feel anything anymore, so
oh, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's just kind of life right now, right?
Yeah. So can't speak to any of that.
Fair enough.
But it's hard to talk about anymore without spoiling a bunch of stuff, but like I kind of had the same arc with Her Story, you know, the interface aside, which is I really love in a detective game, like, and this even happened with like Return of the Obra Dinn to a certain extent, but like I really love figuring out what questions to ask and kind of, you know, like the first little bit of answer. You know, let's say the transition from act one to act two, if we were to put this into a traditional narrative structure, I love that. But as the answers start coming in about what is actually going on here, as the possibility kind of gets set into stone, I almost always get a little bit disappointed, you know, and that was the case with this. You know, I don't think it is. If you know this director, I don't think it is going to be a surprise if I say that. That this being a game about movies, there's a whole bunch of the usual Hollywood aggrandizing. It's the stories we tell and the storytellers behind them that are real important kind of thing, you know, just you end up getting a little bit of that, which I'm not immune to, you know, Charlie Kaufman kind of stuff. But that's a sometimes food. And I wasn't looking for that here. If you know, just speaking vaguely about it, but that is going to be a matter of taste, let's say. I don't know why this is getting the rave reviews that it has been getting. Mm-hmm. Like I have seen perfect scores on this, which is wild to me. Like,
I mean, to a certain degree, isn't this kind of the video game equivalent of Oscar bait?
Kinda. I mean,
it's movies.
Maybe because it's movies. I mean, yeah, that's a possibility. Also, I think that there are very few games that are exactly like this. Although that is not necessarily true, because, you know, listen, when Jala brings another FMV game from the Poe and Monroe crew, the contradiction and stuff like that.
There are very few Game Pass games like this.
There are very few Game Pass games like this. Yeah. FMV is not a rarity. But I think that this, it kind of hit maybe at the right time of the year, and also from an indie creator, you know, who's just like, okay, like it's your third shot at this. I didn't hear anybody talk about Telling Lies, so here you go. Mm-hmm. And then this was just big enough and sprawling enough that it managed to catch people's imagination. I would not give this a perfect score by any stretch, but I, you know, enjoyed it, and it is a rarity. And I ended up, you know, regardless of how disappointing it was when I finally started giving answers, there is something compulsive about looking for them. Mm-hmm. And that is neat to me, that something that is as constricted as this, which is you're just kind of like looking at video clips, is so open-ended and does let you, you know, take those leaps of intuition, which are the kind of the key component of any good detective story. So
it's almost like it's not about the stories they tell or the people telling them, but the people watching the stories they're telling, trying to figure out what they're telling.
It's you who's the star, baby.
So guess something just completely off topic.
Okay.
Well, mostly off topic. This guy who made it, like, what is the threshold for being considered like an indie dev? Because I feel like after you've made Silent Hill, are you really an indie dev? I mean, not that matters, but
it's per. I mean, that was not a huge Silent Hill game. Like Konami farmed it out.
He made like three of them, though.
He was on one of the he did Silent Hill Origins.
Origins and Shattered Memories.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, indie dev, but also, like, he went and started his own studio, and this is an indie scale project. Like, this is not as far as
not that I'm saying, like I said, it doesn't matter at all. I'm just curious. Like, I would have considered, like, once you've made a noteworthy AAA game, you're no longer an indie dev. But, again, it's totally arbitrary.
Yeah.
Okay. The factors like the studio size. So it's like somebody could work for a AAA company, but then they can go on, start their own studio, and then they would be back to being an indie dev, I think.
Yeah. Like, you know, this is a bad example, but like Ken Levine can go from making Bioshock Infinite, and if he starts up a studio with five people, I would call that an indie project. I don't know if I would call him an indie developer, like an indie creator, but, you know, I think it's more about the mode you're working in at the time.
Yeah, I guess maybe I would think, like, if you can make, and again, totally arbitrary, if you can make a game and people will buy it because of who you are, you're not an indie dev.
Mm. So we're getting into gerrymandering. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to bring up Jonathan Blow, whose name can sell individual games. Also, I have no interest in gerrymandering people in or out.
I'm only asking just because I'm interested in hearing how people think about it, not because I'm saying there's like a right or wrong.
Right.
Here's like the 2 points of reference I think of is, yeah, Jonathan Blow, he has like 7 or 8 people that work for him. I would still consider him an indie dev just because it's small. And like Kojima, like, started his own studio with like hundreds of people. And it's like, he's probably not an indie dev.
Yeah, not going to call Death Stranding an indie game, no matter how much you twist my arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is Immortality. Anybody have any more questions about that?
No, it looked cool. Yeah. I think I said this in chat, but it's just cool to see somebody evolve whatever game that they're interested in making and, yeah. and keep iterating on it.
It made me curious about Telling Lies, but you know, I was able to play Immortality because I could gerrymander it into next rank. I don't know if I can do the same to Telling Lies.
Yeah.
But, I have another one, which is going to be real short, but I picked up the remake of a Square RPG for the Switch. It is called Live Alive. I've never had to say it out loud before.
There will be another example of this later in the show.
Is this, cool. is this a sequel to Kill la Kill?
No. Although I think the TV Tropes page makes that joke too.
Ah, damn.
And you may also be thinking of. Live Alive. Dealer's choice. Any of this. This just came out this year. It originally was a Square RPG released back in 1994 for the Super Famicom, so Super Nintendo over here, if it had come out over here, but it didn't. This is kind of one of those big Square games that a lot of people in the West only know about and got to play because of fan translations. You know, when people got in and hacked the ROM to make it English. It got the official re-release here this year with the HD 2D or 2D HD visual style. I think like Octopath Traveler, the pixel art, but with like Unity or Unreal foreshortening and like depth of field kind of stuff put on it. It looks fine. It's like an anthology JRPG game. So there are how many, I need to look and see exactly how many like sub stories. Instead of playing one gigantic JRPG story, it is broken up into, several different little stories, each of which taking place in a particular place and time in history. So there's like a Wild West one. There is, an Edo Japan one, there's Imperial China, and there's, you know, stuff in the future. There's the present day, near future, distant future, stuff like that. And each of these scenarios has its own characters, its own kind of mechanical, its own mechanical focus. Mm-hmm. And all of this kind of comes together at the end for the usual Square Enix, you know, we already made this joke, but like, okay, get the team together. We're all friends and we have to save something good about life. Kind of deal. Mm. This is interesting primarily because it is so oddball. Also it was made by a lot of the team that would go on to work on, Chrono Trigger. Like this, nice. This was put together.
Oh, so it's real early.
I mean, 1994 ish. So late in the SNES, but like people from this would leave once this was over, would go and work on Chrono Trigger, along with people who were finishing up with Final Fantasy VI, you know, and the NX folks, stuff like that. So you get like big name heavy hitters in this, such as let me see here, Takashi Takeda, who ultimately would go on to direct Parasite Eve, ended up being the director on Chrono Trigger. You know, and like even as recently doing the Final Fantasy Theatrhythm kind of deal, and then like the composer Yoko Shimomura, amazing music in this. She was the composer for like Super Mario RPG, Parasite Eve, Xenoblade here recently, a bunch of good stuff like that. This was interesting to me because I never played this originally when it came out, obviously, because you know it was never brought here. And also, I missed it when it came out, when they did a fan translation.
So you should have just spoken Japanese.
I know, right? Why didn't I think of that? And I don't want to go into too much about it, but a thing that has kind of made it go down a little bit easier for me is it is not the standard JRPG. You're standing in a line and the enemies are standing in a line and we're alternating commands kind of deal. I was actually surprised at this because I got it. And then when I saw what combat was like, I was like, oh, this is interesting. You're on a little tactics grid. It is not as like rigorous as a Tactics Ogre or a Final Fantasy Tactics or an XCOM kind of deal, but like positioning matters. The different attacks that you have different kind of like splash damage. They'll leave like tile effects. So, you know, just like, oh, this makes certain squares poison. You want to make sure you don't have, you want to make sure you don't have friendly fire. All of that is there and taken into account, which is neat. Like, it's a little bit more mechanical rigor than I was expecting from a game of this era, which is nice. A thing that I shouldn't have done though, is try and play it. You can pick any of the chapters that you want to. So I figured, oh, I'll just go in chronological order, right? So I'll do the prehistory one. The problem with the prehistory one, do you remember back in the 90s when stuff about cavemen was really popular?
Like the Geico commercials?
No, not really.
And Encino Man?
Yeah, Encino Man, the Flintstones movies starring John Goodman. At least the first one starred John Goodman. That was there. It just kind of felt like there was a bunch of caveman shit going on. you're playing a little prehistory animal boy named Pogo, and the whole thing about it is there is no dialogue. And you may think, oh, like it's not just talking. Grunts. Yeah. So like just grunts or like nobody talks or you just do stuff. Neat. Like I want to play a JRPG with no text. Amazing. And no, instead everything is done in pantomime and with little like doodles in speech bubbles. So signing on for 4 hours of that was almost more than my heart could take. It's like it takes up all the time and you do have the like roll call, something happens and everybody does their little reaction kind of deal. It's like I just want to beat the shit out of some dinosaurs, guys, please, can we just go? I am pleased to say that I've done two more. I've done the Imperial China and the Japan. Those are both much more entertaining with their dialogue and also shorter. So the different chapters have wildly different lengths, but yeah. And that might be about all that I have to say about it. It looks cool. The music fucking owns. Music slaps. So that's been neat. I found myself kind of wishing for the ability to just like have it play the original version, like the chiptune version, but even the arranged stuff is not terrible. So
you can't play the chiptune stuff?
Not that I found. I couldn't find an option for it.
That's really odd.
Maybe I didn't look hard enough.
There's probably some weird licensing problems that they have to use a redone version.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah, it, depending on the synthesizer they use, there might be samples and stuff. Yeah, that is possible. But yeah, it's been kind of neat to poke at it. And I'm primarily sticking around for novelty. The idea of a very light tactics JRPG where no individual scenario lasts for more than like 3 or 4 hours gets a thumbs up from me. Any questions about Live Alive? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Cool. Well, I feel like I monopolized a bunch of time there, so I will step off to the side. Who has a?
I'm proud of you. You played stuff. That's good.
I know, right?
Yeah, it means quality of life is getting better.
Oh man, how about you, Dennis? What have you been playing?
Yeah, I've been playing a bunch. I've been finishing some stuff. I finished God of War, so it's time to talk about this game again.
Cool.
Yeah. Freaking loved it beginning to end. And that's probably my greatest thought, bringing it up again, is this game really sticks the landing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't outstay its welcome. The end feels climactic and has all these giant reveals, but also manages to kind of stay small and personal at the same time. Like there's a really good balance struck throughout this game that you're doing big epic things for small personal reasons. And that's excellent. Like that's exactly what you want in an adventure like this. So I think the last time I talked about God of War, I hadn't yet unlocked the second weapon.
No,
I was early in the game.
You hadn't. And I felt really bad because I almost spoiled it for you. I think
I had to know it was coming, right? Like, And it was definitely like an oh shit moment when that second weapon shows up. So excellent stuff.
I like how it's literally like John Wick. They're just like, all right, gotta go break apart the cement.
Yep.
I have this
yep,
thing.
Yep. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's, you know, it's not that hard to get to, but it's definitely got that feel.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, the way you return to different areas in this game is excellent. And they do that on a couple different dimensions. Like obviously you go back through some of the same areas, a couple times just through, you know, progressing through the story, like physically in space, but then you're also traveling between realms or dimensions that are kind of these like mirror versions of the same area. And so you travel through the same area multiple times from that perspective as well. Mm-hmm. And that's just all really well done. And just gives this game by the end of it, this feel of familiarity. And you almost, I kind of feel like you're, it's definitely not Kratos's arc, but you're falling in love with the world, kind of coming to appreciate maybe through Atreus's eyes. Just like there's, you know, at the beginning of the game, I'm not nearly as familiar with Norse mythology as I am with Greek. And so it was much more of a blank slate to draw mm-hmm. on. And I just thought the game did a great job filling that in with the way it doled out story and lore, but then also with the way that you just became more familiar with the space. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool.
Does Tyr have both hands at this point?
I don't know if Tyr's in this.
Tyr is, you don't see Tyr, but you're kind of following his trail Indiana Jones style.
Oh, that's probably what I heard. Because I had heard that he was in that, but I probably heard that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I had never heard of Tyr before playing this game. So it's just like really cool to come to it fresh. And then that, I think that general lack of familiarity also led to some of the oh shit reveals at the end. being really like literally I exclaimed aloud.
What do you mean that's mistletoe?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, well, and just even like, you know, suddenly
that one.
Yeah, suddenly someone is being called by a name that you hadn't heard before, but that I definitely recognize. Mm-hmm. And maybe I should have seen that coming if it was more familiar, but it's like, oh, like really good stuff. So I'm trying to speak vaguely, because I imagine with Ragnarok coming out soon, there might be other people who are trying to slam through the original game as well. Mm-hmm. A random note, as I'm just reminded because I'm looking at my notes as you're writing notes, my autocorrect changes Kratos to Keaton. So canonically in my head, he is now Keaton, God of War.
He's now Keaton. Hi, I'm Keaton. Welcome to my video game.
Yeah, so the final thought, I guess, is the game continues to be the best example I've seen of what it's like to have a kid around that age. Mm-hmm. Like it's
like
so...
you're throwing axes at things.
Yeah, you know, I get blades thrown at me every once in a while parenting. But you know, I'm watching Obi-Wan Kenobi right now, and Leia in that is just like abrasively written to be, you know, this clearly a very smart character, but just nothing like a kid. And, you know, I think of like The Walking Dead, Clementine, nothing like a kid. Mm-hmm. This nails it, and it continues to nail it throughout, down to really towards the end. Kratos, Keaton, kind of has a Shawshank Redemption, I'm finally free moment. Mm-hmm. And he's just kind of like holding his hands out to the wind. And then finally, or, you know, in the middle of that, you suddenly hear, let's go. We're so close. Like, yeah. God damn it, kid. I mean, son, boy.
Boy.
But it's like, oh, this is so accurate. So they nailed that. And I will be very curious now going into Ragnarok as a preview of coming attractions for me. knowing how well they seem to be doing that, just, you know, capturing the feel of what it's like to actually be in that situation, instead of having a screen sanitized kid. So yeah, no. good
Does
stuff.
Ragnarok have any sort of like time skip? Is the boy older at all?
Yes. So he's basically, probably like 11 or so in the first game, and I think he's probably like 14-ish in the Ragnarok game coming up.
Okay.
That's my, yeah, it's somewhere in that realm. I think there's about 3 years. Towards the end of the first game, they say that like whenever Harbinger of Ragnarok appears, then it's about 3 years for things to, it's a 3 year winter and then Ragnarok happens or something like that. So,
I hope that they bring back, or in Ragnarok, bring one of my favorite things from Norse mythology, which is that Loki shows up on a nail ship.
Oh yeah,
which nail
may mean a ship made out of corpses from like Nar something is the Norse word for corpse, but there's a lot of interpretations that it's literally a ship made out of fingernails.
That's the one that they use in The Witcher, because they've got the Wild Hunt in that. It's fingernails and claws and like finger bones and stuff. But yeah, it's also just thinking about fingernails. I knew I was saving those for some reason.
We can only wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
If Kratos' son is going to be 14 in the new game, I wonder if he's going to have an awkward conversation where he has to explain the mini game of how you have sex with women.
Oh, no.
The birds and the bees, no. A, A, B, X, Y, rotation.
Oh, God, that's good. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. Oh, yeah, fun stuff. Yeah,
regrettable.
Regrettable. Yeah, God bless PlayStation for taking God of War in this direction. I just really appreciate it.
They took it in this direction because they were under a threat of closing, and this was their last hurrah. This was their Final Fantasy.
Yeah. Well, they did a good job, and I can't wait for the next one. So yeah, that's God of War. Finally got that white whale with a red stripe on it for my PlayStation 4 catalog. I also, thanks to Ben, started playing Death Stranding again, this time on a machine that can actually handle it.
Oh, cool.
So, how does it compare?
It is definitely nicer to have the full visual experience versus just trying to crawl your way through with everything low poly. So the recommendation was perfect. Like that makes a ton of sense now that I see what it's like to wander through this world in high def versus whatever I was playing on.
Were you able to catch up to where you were like pretty quickly by just skipping hour cutscenes? Yeah.
Like I think I joked on the show that it would take me about 15 minutes to catch back up, and it literally took me about 15 minutes to catch back up.
I don't remember it being that cutscene heavy at the start. Yeah.
Huh.
And there's so much just little transitional stuff that you don't realize is a skippable cutscene until you're trying to skip all the cutscenes.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So like all of him like going up the lift into the world and going down the lift into his room and this stuff is you can just hit start and skip.
Hmm.
And that's basically, I'd hit start skip until it start took me to the pause menu instead of cutscene skip. And that zoomed me right through. So that's I caught right back up and am kind of now digging into the meat of the game. I think I love the atmosphere and am intrigued by the story. The avoiding BTs, like ghost enemies, which is a significant part of the game, is giving me fits right now.
Okay.
And it's not that the game isn't accomplishing what it's trying to do, because the whole thing is like, you can't really see them and they just kind of appear in rainstorms or timefall. And like, it's the scary thing where you've got a contraption that like blinks faster as they get closer and points towards the nearest one. And sometimes you can kind of catch a wisp of them in a scan, but in general, it's just this like, I'm surrounded, I don't really know where they are thing, which for a horror movie, great, like great cinema. To play that is just frustrating, because when you fail and have to do the escape from the black tar that bubbles up, you just feel like, okay, I failed not because I didn't play right, but because I didn't have enough information.
Hmm.
And then on top of that, if you're playing the game like me, you are basically an Alpine Roomba picking up all this stuff and getting caught, you know, sends it all toppling to the ground.
That is also a thing.
Massive disappointment on that
have
front.
Have you fell into a river yet?
I have not fallen into a river yet. All Does right. it sweep away the cargo?
That's absolute rock bottom in that game.
Oh no. Well, for me, it's like I dropped it in the forest trying to get away from BTs, the ghosts. And the thought is now like, okay, even if I get through now, I'm going to want to go back into the ghost forest to get that stuff out.
Yeah.
There's a part of my lizard brain that just will not allow me to leave that cargo for someone else.
Somebody else is going to get it.
That's like a designed part of the game. So yeah. Again, it's not that Death Stranding is not accomplishing what it wants. It's that for me, this is like very abrasive.
Yeah. You are the mule, Dennis. Yeah. You're the one addicted to delivering packages.
Especially before you get upgrades and stuff. Mm-hmm. That strategy probably will not serve you well.
No, I need to take exactly what I need to take and nothing more, and don't pick stuff up because mm-hmm. It only leads to heartbreak.
I mean, it likely ends in heartbreak. Mm-hmm. it makes heartbreak likelier. Let's say that.
Yeah, it's going to break some containers. So, you know, that not dissuading me from playing the game further. It's just like, man, literally where I am in the game right now is playing it late at night, got caught by BTs, dumped my cargo all over the ground, just hit the home screen button and mm-hmm. walked away. And it's like, whenever I go back in, I'm going to have to finish escaping. And that feels like a chore. So, maybe I'll get back to it.
It is frustrating. Mm-hmm.
So that's Death Stranding. It's a beautiful game. I love what you said last time, Cole, about like it's stealth just on a different scale. Like that feels mm-hmm. very true. And I just wish I could. Maybe I just got to pop down the difficulty a couple notches.
Hey, there's no shame in that.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's Death Stranding. Let's see, Opus Magnum. Any other questions about those big ones? I want to talk about Opus Magnum though.
Old Zachtronics entry.
Yeah, I I have no actual experience with coding or anything like that, but this is a kind of puzzle game that really scratches a niche for me. It is the story is that you're an alchemist and you have to design these contraptions that move orbs around a hex grid, and you know, move them over certain surfaces that will change them, certain surfaces that will bond them together, and you're kind of building a molecule-esque looking thing, and you have to build a specific combination of these orbs in a certain kind of layout, and you're doing that by kind of writing a program-ish for different mechanical pieces. So you can have an arm that can rotate and grab and drop. You can have a track that kind of slides things around and variants thereof. You could probably solve most of these puzzles just with brute force fairly quickly. But it is a great game to just kind of sit and meditate and think about how to optimize your solution to use as few lines of code or as few cycles, I think they call it, as possible, or use mm-hmm. as little money as possible. Like, it's just a really, really fun game.
It does the Zachtronics thing of giving you the five point like rating kind of deal, mm-hmm. like all the different axes for like evaluating your solution.
Yeah, there's cost, there's cycles, and there's one other thing I'm trying to remember. Oh, area, how big your machine is.
Gotcha.
Does it give you like percentile information? Like you're in the top 10% of like costs, but you're lacking in this? Yeah. Or
it's literally just a bar chart that kind of forms a rudimentary bell curve, mm-hmm. and you see where you are on that chart.
Yep. Okay.
Which I've been. It's also interesting because you also then see where you trend. Because, you know, optimizing for cost or optimizing for area is not necessarily the same thing as optimizing for cycles. And so you might get a really good score on one dynamic, but not so good on the others. So I apparently tend towards the fewest cycles at the sacrifice of areas or of area.
Do you not let yourself proceed until you meet a particular threshold, or is it just any solution? Is
no, the I honestly the barrier is a solution that I feel is elegant.
Yes.
And that is just completely feel definition that I put on myself. I never actually completely solve the problem until I have the solution. I know it will work, and then I let it play through, and then I see the bar chart. So I have no idea how well or poorly I'm solving it until I'm at a solution I'm happy with, which is kind of cool. Like I don't mind that it works that way.
Have you, so does area matter in the game? I don't know. Is it using up more reagents or anything like that? Or
that I've seen, you never run out of board. And I think Ben, you've played this, right?
Yeah, I can't even remember, but
yeah, I just
remember it's like a Chinese checkered type board, right?
Yeah. I'm through the first two chapters and have never seen a limit to the board. But really, like, I haven't built any structures that would force me to expand too crazy. So, yeah. There's also a really neat learning curve in that, you know, being on a hex grid, everything is a combination of a certain finite number of shapes. And so once you figure out a real efficient method of making one shape, you can apply that to all your future contraptions, which, yeah, makes for a really smooth learning curve.
Nice.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, I'm also surprised by the amount of effort that went into the story for this game. Just like the writing so far has been really fun to read, and the way they kind of hint at this broader world and political intrigue through the eyes of people who are not necessarily interested in it, but have to live with it because it's their job.
Okay.
Is a really fun convention. Like, you know, your character is kind of a stuck up wonder kid who's trying to make a name for himself, but he's got to do it by coming up through all this political intrigue, relationships. So it's a little Sherlock Holmesy, I guess.
Zachtronics turned toward doing more story content. I mean, underlined by when they did, what was it, Eliza, which was just straight up a visual novel about AI automated therapy kind of stuff.
Interesting. Yeah.
Has been one of the
streams. I didn't realize that it's them.
Yeah, has been one of the stranger turns for a studio to take, and I'm kind of here for it.
Well, and especially for Opus Magnum, because I've seen GIFs of this game and streams of it very briefly, and it's always the contraptions, right? Like, it's always showing off the results of the puzzles. And so I came in just kind of expecting it to be locked in on that, and so to wander into a really entertaining story as well is a nice little bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are the big ones for me that I've been playing.
Cool. Let's see. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I just got to this week. I finished Planet Crafter, which is a game I started in the last episode. As a reminder, it's kind of like Terraforming Mars, the board game meets Subnautica. Mm-hmm. So it's, you're just building a, but you're crafting a bunch of things that terraform a Mars-like planet into being an Earth-like planet, essentially. And there's a lot of satisfaction as far as like turning the sky blue or having water form on the planet and stuff like that. So I basically got towards the end of the tech tree, and I kind of fully explored the map that they have so far. It's in early access still. So there's not much for me left to do in the game. So I stopped. There are like a couple more things I could unlock if I want to, like, I don't know, kind of do more tasks or whatever, but I think I'm done with it for now.
Is it the kind of like end game things where it's like, okay, unlocking this will make me ridiculously powerful so that like the fun and challenge of the game isn't even relevant?
It's more like the thing that you just did, do that 50 more times and you can unlock one more thing. It's like, but I mean, since it's still like, since they're still working on it and stuff, I imagine like, you know, I doubt they spent a lot of emphasis like balancing the end game compared to the earlier game stuff. So, and that's stuff that will probably change too in the future. So that's like another reason why I'm just fine with stopping at this point, since I might be doing work that would be undone in the next update.
Yeah.
A good game to check back in on.
Yeah. But I definitely enjoyed it for now. It's, I think I probably sank like maybe 10 to 20 hours into it and definitely enjoyed that. So, if you're looking for something, it's not a bad game to check out, I guess, especially if you like something like Subnautica. I don't think I have too much more to say about it besides that.
Cool.
And then the new game that I have this week is a game called Taiji. So T-A-I-J-I. This is a game that I've been following for a little while. It's a game that's very inspired by The Witness. It's a single dev who's working on it, who's doing like the artwork and the programming and stuff for it.
Oh, this is real Witnessy.
Yeah. And I think even in the advertising of the game, it's like a Witness inspired game.
Yeah.
The main difference is it's like a 2D, like, you know, like, I don't know, 16-bit, 32-bit type style game. And you're kind of exploring like this 2D area. And it's similar to The Witness in that there's kind of like these biomes to it where there's, you know, like of these places that are, you know, have a theme where it's like, oh, this might be a place where you do logging or quarrying or there's like a warehouse or a factory in one area. And then there's puzzles around the area. And then the other difference is instead of it being like drawing line puzzles, the main mechanic is that it'll show you some sort of like N by N grid, and you can basically click on individual tiles to either highlight or like select or unselect spaces. And then you try and solve some sort of logical puzzle through that. And it's similar to The Witnesses. You kind of have to figure out what the rule is through experimentation and then try and do more difficult problems. Mm-hmm. So it's a similar mechanic, but it's not exactly the same. So there is some differentiation there. Kind of the problem with this game is that a lot of the puzzles need a little bit more refinement. Especially if you're comparing the game to The Witness, there's kind of like a high bar, depending upon who's playing on the game. But for at least me, there's kind of like a high bar of like...
You don't have to hedge around me, it's fine.
Well, I'm just saying like the puzzle design and progression was so good in The Witness as far as like people being able to learn like what the mechanics are through like the iteration of puzzles. And all that stuff is very, very finely tuned. And so this is kind of an example of maybe like missteps in that process where there's definitely puzzles where you might get it right and you might not know why, or you just like accidentally get it right. And you're like, okay, well, I guess I'll move on to the next one. And you haven't really learned, you haven't really gotten anything valuable out of the puzzle. You don't have like the same aha moment that you get out of practically every puzzle that's in The Witness.
Right.
So that's kind of like a broad view of it. There are some puzzles that are good. The other thing that's a bit of a nitpick too is like a lot of the rules of the game are also kind of borrowed from The Witness. So like, spoiler alert on The Witness, if anyone's waiting to play it 6 years later, but there's one iconography in the game where to show that something, you can rotate something, it's just put at like a 45 degree angle or a 30 degree angle. To show that a game rule, it's the same game rule, but you can also now do rotations with it. The same iconography is done in this game as well. There are a few things that are new in this one that aren't in The Witness, but in general, it does feel kind of like a less refined version of The Witness, to the point that it's, I don't know if I could recommend the game. The price point's like $20 for the game, and since like that's half the cost of The Witness, I definitely don't think it's half as good as The Witness. But I'm not trying to shit on it too hard because it's like, it's a solo person who made it. And I think keeping that in mind, it's a very good effort. But yeah, I would wait for it to go on sale and buy it for like maybe like $5 or something like that. Yeah. If you're a fan of The Witness. But I played it to unending. I'm not sure if there's like multiple endings in it, like there is in The Witness. But I definitely played it to the point where I was okay with being done with it. I think one of the other trappings that this falls into is even in an interview, Jonathan Blow talks about how it's not hard to make a puzzle difficult. You just keep adding like stuff in if you want to like ratchet up the difficulty on a puzzle. And I think this game kind of falls victim to that in a couple places where there will be these giant like 10 by 10 puzzle grids. And it's like, I can solve this. I can sit down and figure it out, but like, I'm not like wanting to go on to the next puzzle. I'm just doing this so that I can get everything done essentially. So that part's a little bit, that part's a little bit frustrating as well, but
anytime I see, I mean, like the difficulty comes in a whole bunch of different kind of, you know, flavors. There are like lots of axes on which something can be difficult. When a puzzle is made too difficult by adding complexity, or a fight is made difficult by adding complexity, there's a web comic called Poorly Drawn Lines that has a, I'll just say the gag, the couple's in bed and the wife says, "Do you have any fantasies?" And then before she speaks, she finishes the sentence, the guy like pulls out this big bag of pine cones and starts like pouring it on her. It's like, more pine cones, more pine cones. I just think, yeah, no, you know what this puzzle needs? More pine cones. Oh, God. Continue.
Yeah. I think, how can I follow up on more pine cones? Silver lining, the game never crashed or never had any, like, you know, terrible bugs or anything like that, you know? It's a functional game and everything. But yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, I'd been following this for a while. Like, the person who made it does a YouTube like series and talking about the development on the game. They have a Discord and everything. They're kind of in the same circle as a lot of other like solo devs. So like, I think, Corey Martin was one of the playtesters of the game. That's the guy who did Pipe Push Paradise and other games, Bonfire Side Peaks. So I think, you know, he's kind of part of that sort of group of people who kind of like play one of those games and do that stuff. But I think, yeah, it could have probably used a little bit more refinement. So, yeah. So again, I don't want to be too hard on this game given the context of how it was made. And it's probably worth a playthrough again at a certain price point. It just might not be what it is right now. So yeah.
Nice. And I linked the comic in the chat. It is it is a three-word phrase, not poorly drawn lines, different comics. Nice. So Taiji, is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think that's how you pronounce it. T-A-I-J-I. I didn't look up the correct pronunciation, but yeah.
Is that the name of a character in there, or?
Honestly, I don't know what it means. Along with that name is typically a picture of like something that looks like a yin yang but rectangular, so I just assumed it was some sort of perhaps Eastern concept, but I don't know.
Nice. David, how about you?
Honestly, I've been so busy I don't have much to speak of. I've been continuing to play Destiny, but that's just, you know, a live game that you kind of just play a bit every day. So I really don't have anything of interest.
That's fine. Kind of awkward that I went to you last. Oh, man.
You know.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that sounds like a segment to me.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it normally. This time, though, we did a free play. I posted this. Apologies. I posted it late, so there wasn't a lot of time. We only have two, so this is going to be a short free play. Free play is what we call that. And I'll get us started here. Jeremy says, "Well, what is your favorite holiday, and why is it Halloween?"
Answered it right there.
I mean, I'm probably going to say Halloween, not because of anything I do. I don't really like go to costume parties. I don't have kids to, you know, to celebrate, you know, to take around and do trick or treat. But
do you
like
get that, do you get that hex crank bump during Halloween season?
I mean, there's hex crank, and also it is every October on WoF, it is all horror games. We got a banger of a month this year. We're doing Devotion, Strangeland, and The Evil Within 2. It's going to be a good time. But also, yeah, no, like I like this time of year the most, the fall rules. I'll say this. I like people's decorations, you know, Christmas decorations, you know, whatever, everybody does them. There are some people in my neighborhood who fucking lose their minds on Halloween, on Halloween decorations. And I live in the most like, just it's all like single story ranches. It's a very modest neighborhood, you know, we're like, you know, right near a school. So it's just a bunch of like unassuming. You wouldn't think people would go all out, but there must be something in the water. I don't know what's going on.
They got room in their yards for inflatables.
Yes. So I've not seen anybody with the 12-foot Home Depot skeleton, but the year is young. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, dude, I almost shanked a decoration at Home Depot.
A little keyed up?
Well, I was buying a putty knife, so I had a knife in my hand, and I walked past one of those like motion activated things that starts moving and stuff.
Yeah.
And that was fun.
That's well, how about you? What's your favorite holiday and why is it Halloween if it's Halloween?
Yeah, I mean, you will be shocked to learn that for someone who's super into cosplay, I really like Halloween. There's a ton of stuff going on right now in terms of right now getting ready for Halloween. So, starting sometime in August, all the fabric stores get in their Halloween and fall themed fabric.
Okay.
Because it takes some time to sew stuff, things like that.
It's a project.
So I'm still figuring out exactly what I'm going to make from all that. There's some really neat, basically like fishnet material, except that spider web.
Okay.
That I might make something out of. And then on the actual day of Halloween, my neighbor has one of those big inflatable movie screens. So we do that and watch some sort of Halloween themed movie. So last year we watched Ghostbusters.
Cool.
Excellent.
I don't know that we've decided what we want to watch this year. We've talked about Ghost Rider.
Oh, the Nicolas Cage one?
Yeah, because, I mean, Nicolas Cage is just amazing in everything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, but, something appropriately spoopy.
Oh, if you're looking for Nicolas Cage, and if you're looking for suggestions, I do not mean to be presumptuous. The Color Out of Space with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, really want to see that. When it was in theaters, I couldn't find a theater that actually showed it.
Yeah. The director was outed as a sexual harasser. So let that factor in. I don't think he's going to get to make a lot more movies, but the movie's still good. Dennis, how about you?
Halloween has to be up there. Just for the fun factor of when you're going out as a family, you can like mess around with themes in a really fun way.
Mm-hmm.
So we've gone as all different elements of a circus. We've gone as Star Wars. I was Darth Vader and they were Jedi Padawans.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted to get darker, I would have gone as Anakin.
And had them be Jedi Padawans. That would be amazing.
Missed opportunity. This year, it's still a toss up. We're thinking about doing either The Wizard of Oz or The Cat in the Hat, or the kids will go as sharks and we will go as swimmers.
Ooh.
That's a little bit more of a general theme, but it will allow for a lot more fun just chasing each other around, which is always good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how about you, Ben?
I'll be bold and beautiful and say that Thanksgiving's my favorite holiday.
Cool.
But that's just because you hang out with friends, eat food, and drink beer. So,
yeah, all the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And then the final question here, we have Tyler who writes, "What is your dream video game that doesn't exist? ... yet."
Ooh.
Yeah, this is tough because
what's your wish for game.
Yeah, like I don't know. For some reason, I'm stuck in like simulation kind of thing. What about like a city builder, but you're trying to, I've talked about this, like a city builder, but it's in like the King in Yellow, Aster kind of thing.
Oh, nice. Okay,
what is it? The city Carcosa is starting to like manifest. And so you've got to manage the city and build and do like a Frostpunk kind of thing as certain parts of it are overtaken by the otherworldly forces and stuff. Yeah. I want Frostpunk, but with a King in Yellow kind of stuff.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
So I think mine, I would love to see more mashups of the Soulsborne formula, particularly like the, you know, I'm particularly kind of the dungeon crawling, you know, those sorts of, you know, interesting levels, all that stuff, mashed up with just more interesting genres. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know, I'd love to see a Soulsborne combat flight game.
Okay.
You know,
instead of dodge rolls, it's barrel rolls.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, instead of campfires, you have landing pads.
Mm-hmm, of course.
You know, open world, but not Elden Ring style open world. Good open world. But yeah, I think that's what I'd go to. Pretty much anything mashed up with that or with the Nemesis system from Shadow of War.
When you say anything, does that include Pinocchio? Because we are getting that.
Whether you want it or not.
That does look amazing. Also, technically, we're getting two of them because I think Steel Rising is pretty much, you know,
yeah,
that.
That's weird. I don't know, man.
Wait, what?
I know. I feel like I like to imagine that the pitch for Steel Rising was, what if we made a Soulsborne starring the Plain Doll?
Yeah, I haven't paid too much attention to Steel Rising. When we're working on a season for Bonfire Side Chat, like about a From game, I can just ignore all other Souls likes and then come back and do a search and say, they released what?
So my big beef with it right now is that it's not Steel Space Rising, it's Steel Rising one word.
That's weird.
Which to me, I think you then get to put the spaces wherever you want. So I choose to believe that is Steel Rising.
Steel Rising, yeah. Huh.
Steel Rising.
How about you, Dennis? Dream game.
I'm starting to cross into, like, you know, games that I've daydreamed about trying to make if I had an ounce of coding ability. And the one idea I've always had that I thought would be fun is a platformer slash time travel game, not Braid. But you would kind of be able to get partway through a level and, pose when you jump or stuff like that to make platforms or things to throw your future self. And then rewind back to the start of the level and start just a second later so that you're following behind your original guy and like get further. And you kind of do these, acrobats tossing each other kind of moves just with your past selves to get across the level.
Is like a world in Braid, though.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You throw the ring. Yeah.
No. There's one where you have a duplicate version of yourself.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I remember that.
And can you platform off yourself?
There are puzzles where, yeah, you send platforms in the form of Goombas to jump on other things.
Interesting. Okay. Well, there you go. Maybe I just need to replay Braid.
Couldn't hurt. Mm-hmm. And Ben, how about you?
So I mentioned this one maybe 3 years ago, but I would really like to see a game done with cloud computing in a way where the game is too big to be stored on any individual computer, but you're using cloud computing in order to store everything and basically stream a game. Mm-hmm. I don't have any specifics on what you would need to do that, but or what type of game it would be, but something where it's like, I don't know, you make your own planet or something like that. And whatever, you can visit other people's, that sort of thing. Cause the potential is definitely there and it could be done, but there hasn't been a good application of it yet.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Nice. Cool. That's all the questions that I have. I'm sorry I didn't gather up any from previous ones. I just didn't anticipate. Came together at the last minute here.
That one's on me, guys. So
Good. There's no worries. Let's see here. If you would like to participate in the multiplayer, thank you to both of you who asked. You can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The End Boss.
Now it is time for The End Boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us, possibly that are exciting to us, although this is not terribly exciting. Hey, Dennis, what's some bullshit that Sony announced?
Yeah, so like, you know, they had their state of play earlier in the night that we're recording. You know, lots of cool games and trailers. And then there's this weird, like, sub-segment where some marketing person talks about PlayStation Stars, which are digital collectibles that you can unlock through their loyalty program. And you could just see it in her eyes. She was trying so hard not to say NFT throughout the entire thing. And it just like, you could tell that all of the digital collectibles were NFTs because they were really shittily modeled. Like it was baby's first Blender tutorial kind of stuff. Just, you know, remakes of different characters or places you might recognize if you're a PlayStation fan. And I have to imagine that this is a project eking out to the public in a neutered form as PlayStation was working on an NFT thing and then realized once the project had inertia that was an incredibly bad idea that fans would not let fly.
Yeah. So they took the blockchain part out of it because there's nothing you can do. You know, at this scale with a blockchain that cannot be better handled by a database, and said, oh, well, we're going to solve as much of this as we can. As much of this as we can.
Yeah. So you know, it's thankfully, and again, the whole thing just felt like an apology, right? Like they got caught with their hand in their cookie jar and they're like, I wanted to tell you about some really great cookies I was going to bring you.
I dropped them, but let me just describe them.
Yeah, you know, it's not going to be on consoles. It's going to be on the PlayStation app, and it's only going to launch in Asia initially, and then they'll roll it out in other regions, which you know is less weird. That's more of just a global company thing. That's it. But like, man, it just that stuck out like a sore thumb in an otherwise pretty cool state of play.
Yeah, that what's it called? Pacific Drive game looks cool.
Yes,
Stalker, it looks amazing. Stalker, yes. with cars in the Pacific Northwest.
And that looks so cool.
Maybe it's just because they showed PSVR 2 stuff earlier in the thing, but that the way the camera was set up for Pacific Drive and all that read hardcore as a game that would have a VR version. So I hope that's the case.
Yeah,
be cool as hell.
Was there anything else that stuck out to folks from the Sony event?
No Forspoken was the surprise for me.
I don't know if I think they need to get a little bit more distance from that trailer that came out.
Well, yeah, and I think there was some demos and stuff that went out that it's starting to redeem itself. But yeah, I guess, you know, just in the now would be the right time for it to be showing up in a state of play. But yeah, notably absent.
Yeah,
I've even heard of this.
Licking its wounds, perhaps.
Just action RPG that had a very embarrassing trailer with lots of real quippy. So that just happened. Kind of dialogue in it.
I'm hip.
Yeah. Let's see, Ben. What's happening over on the Nintendo side? My story relates to this as well.
Oh, okay. But. Yeah. I was just going to talk about there was a new trailer that came out for the next Zelda game. And then this is what I referenced before, either called Tears of the Kingdom or Tears of the Kingdom.
So, it has to be Tears because Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, Breath and Tears.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Does that, I mean, it could also, this is controversial in the Elden Ring community as well. This distinction. Yeah.
Next one will be Vomit of the Fiefdom. We're just
maybe
working our way through all the bodily functions.
Yeah, my vote is for Tears because I tweeted, and I'm just this is more just a warning for everybody. In saying Tears of the Kingdom in perpetuity, I'm definitely going to call this Tears in Heaven. No. 85% as an honest mistake, and then 15% as a joke. Mm-hmm. It's up to you which one it is at the time, but Tears of the Kingdom is a weird title.
I was going to be contrarian and just pick the pronunciation that no one else went with, but
gotcha. Yeah. The
like Max Minning.
That one, you unfortunately, monster. Is not intentional.
I saw people saying that the Tears of the Kingdom. There were two reasons why the Nintendo Direct was postponed and not shown immediately in Britain. And people had two guesses. One, because of the name Tears of the Kingdom, you know, given the fact that apparently monarchy still exists and the queen died. surprise me. The other one is the, GoldenEye, the updated kind of port that they're doing for that. One of the lines is, I'm not doing it for Britain. I'm doing it for me, or something like that. So I guess just because everybody is real sensitive over there for some reason, they had to delay it because of that. Yeah.
Weird.
Huh. I don't know. I haven't seen the trailer. What sticks out to you on the trailer for
Link can skydive and there's sky islands now. That's the TLDR of the trailer.
I thought they weren't doing new geography.
Well,
surprise.
He lands on a something that looks like a leaf, but it's also like archaic and stone looking, but it's floating in the sky, so
yeah.
I don't know. There'll be something cool. And there's, you know, more climbing and stuff like that, more traversal.
Cool.
I don't know. I might play it, I might not. There's not much for the Switch out right now, so might as well, I guess.
But. Yeah, the first one didn't land real well for you. I know that.
Yeah, it was an airplane game, but yeah, I kind of petered out when I got to when I realized there weren't temples in the game. I was kind of saddened by that.
Gotcha.
But, yeah. There's other cool stuff there, but yeah. Not my game, but other people can enjoy it. That's good.
My story out of the Nintendo event is their announcement of a new Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm game. Ooh. I think that's how you pronounce it. Theater Rhythm. Those games were originally for the 3DS. This is the Final Fantasy and broadened out to just be like Square RPG music rhythm games where you're tapping along and doing rhythm game stuff, but to familiar songs from RPGs that you know and love. And they're bringing in a whole bunch of stuff. There's going to be DLC for like Nier games in there. There's going to be, I think I saw some Chrono Trigger. Just generally, I have been aching for a rhythm game here recently, you know, just in the classic style. And the fact that they are not letting that die on the 3DS is cool and good to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's called Theater Rhythm Final Bar Line, because Square doesn't know how to name video games.
Square.
Was there anything else that stuck out about the Nintendo event for y'all?
No, I shamefully did not pay much attention to it. So
cool.
Yeah, I've not owned a Nintendo product in like a decade, so
something like that. And David, round us out. What's happening in the world of tabletop?
Yeah, so apparently at some point in its past, Wizards of the Coast bought TSR,
mm-hmm.
but then forgot to file the paperwork to, I don't know, extend its copyright or own it or whatever. I guess it's trademark. Mm-hmm. And so another company bought TSR, or I guess didn't buy it, just kind of declared themselves TSR.
Like we're TSR now?
Yes. and to be fair, they had, they recruited one of Gygax's kids, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's at least something, but it turns out that Wizards of the Coast is filing an injunction against them because it turns out they're super, super racist.
Oh, the new TSR people.
Right. So, and not just like sort of cringy race. Well, cringy, but you know what I mean? Not just sort of racist. They are remaking a old game called Star Frontiers. That again, you know,
I I read this article this morning. I almost don't want to say what they're doing just because I don't want to reinforce whatever.
If we can avoid getting specifics in what they say, denigrating, that would be great.
I would just say they made a subclass tied to a race, and that's like enough to say don't do that.
To take it another way, disparaging things about about lots of folks, and then one of the subsets is Nordic, and they've got bunches of good things to say about Nordic people.
They just straight up get better stats than everyone else.
Classic white supremacy stuff. Also, disgusting.
This one, I couldn't actually find information on the details, to be fair, but apparently, according to the whatever filing, the draft of the game specifically doesn't allow characters to be trans.
Yeah, there's stuff about that in the filing as well. I'm unclear. Like, are they? So is this a bunch of? Is the objectionable material present in the original version of the Star Frontiers game, or is this a bunch of 8kun, 8chan assholes, edgelords coming in and saying, yeah, baby, we're going to fight against tabletop games going woke? Because there's a lot of attention, even like Wizards of the Coast has a lot of attention on it for, failures to update things about the settings and characters and stuff like that, and also their efforts to try and get better at it. Like, that is an active mode of conversation. So I don't know if like this is being specifically made in reaction to that by reactionary shitheads.
You ever
that's
been,
the idea I got?
Yeah, you ever been so pissy that you bought a company?
At first, I was like proud of Wizards of Kids for doing this, but then I realized that the lawsuit that they have are like, this is gonna, people might be confused with that with our brand, and that's gonna hurt our brand negatively. So it's like they're still doing it for selfish, like monetary reasons. It's like, it's not like, hey, this is just wrong. You shouldn't do this.
To give them a certain amount of benefit of the doubt, like if you just say, like, hey, I don't like that speech, I'm going to sue you for it. You don't technically have standing because TSR is so linked to Wizards of the Coast that somebody could plausibly say, like, oh yeah, I thought that you had something to do with this. What the fuck? They have standing because of reputational damage. Is the theory for it. So their motivation, it might be a little of column A, a little of column B, but it couldn't just be like, hey, you're such an asshole that the government needs to solve the problem for me.
The other thing, and again, this obviously any of this could be performative, but they have done a lot with like the next edition of D&D, de-emphasizes the difference between the various races.
Yeah.
Basically, anything that is not like explicitly, obviously a physical, trait, like, bird people have wings, or very obvious things like, orcs are stronger than gnomes. Basically, other because than that, larger? There's no difference between the various races.
Yeah, just trying to get racial essentialism out of it. And it's imperfect, right? Like, they did that Spelljammer adjunct or source book that had some unfortunate things that were, old caricatures of particular folks, and they got backlash for that. Like, these issues are very much in the spotlight, and right. not just because of, pieces of shit whining about black hobbits or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do have to say, though, my favorite sentence or whatever passage from the apparent rules is, remember, racism is bad. Don't do racial things like racism. Have fun with it, but remember, some races are just sometimes superior in some ways.
Fucking vile.
What?
Vile.
Racism is bad. Also, here's something super racist.
Yeah, these people should be bankrupted.
The one I kind of want to know is apparently the game explicitly describes Black Lives Matter as radical, which I really want to know how that even comes up.
Yeah. Also, that gets rid of any of the notion that this would be just a straight update.
Guys, yeah. this is the video game version of that Hunter Biden movie.
Oh God. they're going to talk about that on QAnon Anonymous, and I'm never going to watch it, but it sounds like it broke their minds. So,
oh God.
Yeah. Fucking vile. Yeah.
What a note to end the episode on.
So to that end,
mock these people and deplatform them.
Somewhat more positive is I have one other story that I didn't actually. I did post that someone made a side-scrolling shooter, Galica or whatever style shooter, entirely using images generated by one of those AI things. Mm-hmm. That are popular now, and it's actually pretty badass.
Huh. So, yeah, I feel conflicted about that whole thing, because on one side, like, a person who just doesn't have resources and wants to create a game of some sort suddenly can get a ton of really cool art through a computer. But on the flip side, like, the really cool artists that...
Yeah.
Paying artists to begin with. You know, we live in a capitalist country.
But they kind of were. I mean, Dennis, you were paying artists, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's, I think it's that kind of thing where I would love to see this be something that it helps someone prove a concept, and then they would transition to, you know, bringing in an artist when they're resourced for it. Mm-hmm. I'm confident there will be a ton of people trying to cut out the quote unquote middleman.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think, you know, long term, you won't see anything big. I don't want to shoot myself in the foot. Maybe you'll see something big come out without an artist. But I think,
unless Batman on the subway becomes a genre of game, I don't think the AI is going to beat out artists.
Yeah, I think
that's the hope.
Yeah, I think anything that's actually going to be good quality is going to, be hiring and paying artists, because turns out you need to actually pay people.
Well, just the intention of art direction and everything like that. What gave me pause as I was saying that is there's going to be the exception that proves the rule. There is going to be some game where part of the cell line is completely made with DALL-E art, and it's going to be just the haha isn't that wacky thing for people that don't think about it on an additional
right
level. Go out there. Yeah.
Well, like, and also the other side of things is that, like, taste is a lot of art is more about taste and,
discretion, thought
and intention and those sorts of things than is about, actual manual dexterity of drawing things.
Yeah.
So, like, even if an AI can make the images, someone still has to choose what images to make.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, you get those AI generated scripts or whatever, or, AI generated tweets. Somebody is taking the raw output and like editing that down. And there's editorial put over it. But also, like, AI art is inherently plagiaristic. Any of those images, my understanding is they are assembled from other pieces of art that are put in, that are read in as the training, as the knowledge base. So a piece of AI is on some level basically just a collage, so like,
yeah, that it's such a hard field to set down concretely on, because like in one way yes, in another way it's like every piece of art is inspired by the pieces of art that came before, and like yada yada. I think what would be really interesting is that what predominantly happens is these kind of tools are ways for artists to do their concepting instantaneously.
Yeah.
And almost like feed, hey, if you want a quote from me on potential art, like the first round, instead of me slaving away on five different concepts and you're only going to pick one of them, I can use AI to show you a 80 for the 20 on several very different directions and have a conversation. And then they're, you know, able to use it that way. So I'm hopeful that this is a tool that will enable artists, and then it will also enable small creators who aren't ready for an artist yet.
Yeah. If this stands in for like mood boards and, you know, like just composition pieces, like, oh yeah, like the, like I'm going to show this guy standing right here. When I worked at that animation studio, we used other people's images all the time and pitches saying like, yeah, it's going to be like this, you know?
Well, it's funny. So when I briefed the artwork, for Deck of Wonders, I spent so much freaking time Google image searching just for like things that evoked the feel or idea of what I was going for.
You want reference. It's part of communication.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things that Lauren was like, hey, that was really helpful to have all those images, but it took me fucking forever and a day. So if I could just feed in what I'm thinking to a Dolly and get back stuff that I can show to Lauren, that'd be great. Let's use it that way. And I'm hopeful that's the direction it'll go instead of trying to replace people. Some assholes will try to replace artists with it. One might do fine, most won't, and it'll find its equilibrium, I hope.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a tangent for the end boss, huh?
Yes, it was. how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Dolly, show me pictures of buttons.
I don't have a license. It actually costs money to do that.
Oh, no.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's level number 428. We really appreciate it. Trying to think of stuff you can do, but you know what you can do. You can rate a review, like us on Facebook for the multiplayer. Patreon is a thing. It's all there. It's all good. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Just because it's big news, I finally have a ship date for Deck of Wonders after much like not feeling comfortable enough pinning it down to a date. It will be in people's hands by the end of the year.
Fantastic. So
look for it in December. And if you go to Kickstarter, and check the latest update, I put up like a shipping tracking dashboard thing that I'll keep updated. So it's actually finally locked in. And that is very exciting.
Nice. Woohoo. Congratulations. Let's see here. And Jala over at her podcast, Jala Chan's Place, looks like the most recent episode is about Who Framed Roger Rabbit, although that was a little while ago, so there might be something new as of the time this comes out.
So I just posted, apparently this is what AI thinks of the prompt, button it up.
Yeah, that's there's always that uncanniness where like the edges don't match up.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can watch me stream on Friday and Saturday nights over DuckFeed TV on Twitch.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me hoping my stuff doesn't fall off the side of a ship while it's being taken from one side of the world to the other.
I'm David Meismith. You can find me recovering from Dragon Con.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. You can find David at the Joanne Fabrics.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. That's a fun
place. So much.
Fun place to walk around in. For the craft stuff, anyway. Let's see. Who's got titles?
Where'd they go?
I think I have a grand total of one. Okay. Which is Jump Scare Threshold.
Okay.
I have one as well. I have a bunch of caveman shit going on.
Okay. What you got, Dennis?
I got two. I have goth paraphernalia.
Okay.
And then P for plaster.
P. So I don't have any. I apologize for not writing any down. A bunch of caveman shit going on is funniest, but I think goth paraphernalia would be good. I like that as a phrase.
I support this.
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't any get opposition? Caught by the profanity filters too.
Yeah, I don't want to put in an asterisk and have it throw some line of code that didn't escape.
Yeah.
Cool. It is decided.